any questions?
Yeah, this probably is a quite naive question due to the fact that I don't know the literature. Maybe you can go back to transference level 17. Because what I didn't understand is why the skeptical argument has to have this form. Why wouldn't it be more plausible, more probable to have it in the form of P1 and then P2 if not PIV, then I cannot know that it has to stop. And then from that I derive C.
Well, it doesn't matter if you just write it the other way around by negating the consequence and then just taking the consequence as an antecedent, negating it, and an antecedent as a consequence and negating it, then you just get the inverse of this conditional, and then just the whole thing transfers into a modus ponens. It doesn't make a difference. The argument as it is here is in modus tollens form, and it's valid as any modus tollens is. And if you change it, to answer you correctly, in the way you propose, then you have just a modus ponens form of the same type of argument. Doesn't make a difference as turning conflict.
Is that the case?
I mean, you just take a consequence, negate it, and make it an antecedent. I mean, that's a bit too much, but I thought you to say, well, instead of this, you write. And these two are just equivalent. Logically equivalent. Or functionally equivalent. So this doesn't make a difference to the argument. Okay. I mean, this is just the way it's usually outlined. You find it hundreds of times in almost any author or in skepticism. You find the argument more or less as I described it here. And as I say, sometimes, very often, with the ambiguity between BIV and BIV star. Usually people don't fill in non-BIV in here, but just say denial of a skeptical proposition, and then they interpret the skeptical proposition sometimes with BIV and sometimes with BIV star, or something with similar problems or similar ambiguities. Yeah.
Concerning your revised version of this argument, with P1 star. There you say this is not as plausible, right?
Yes.
So I want to challenge that.
Okay.
And you have to say that I know that non-BIF star, right? And for that, you have to be able to exclude that possibility that you are that non-big star.
Yeah.
To know, you have to exclude this possibility, and you cannot do that, so you don't know. So it seems to me entirely plausible.
Now, I mean,
as such plausible as, I mean, always in those discussions, it seems to have not any progress at all.
People accept P1 star, because they say, in order to know that you are non-BIV star, you have to know that you are a non-BIV. This is what they claim. This is the rationale, for example, Duncan Richard gives, literally. Okay? He says, you cannot know that you're not a handless brain in a vat, because otherwise you would have to know that you're not a brain in a vat, that you're not in a skeptical scenario. Now, this is not true.
Yeah.
In order to know that you are not a handless brain in a vat, it suffices that you know that it suffices to know that you have two hands.
Okay.
You just need to know one contract, if you accept closure, which is unproblematic here.
Okay.
Now the question is, do you know it? And I say, without antecedent skepticism or other reasons, which you might have,
yeah,
you don't know that.
Okay.
You know that.
Okay.
So if you have other reasons to deny that, perhaps, but then this is not your skeptical argument anymore. Then your skeptical argument is, look, you don't know that you have two hands because you cannot exclude this possibility. Here is a skeptical argument that you don't know that you have two hands because you don't know that you're not a brain in a vat. Yeah, so it's a different type of argument. So I'm just addressing this type of argument. The argument now you give, for example, the argument which probably Kretsky would give is, then it depends essentially what does it mean to rule out this possibility. Okay. And in some sense, I mean in an externalist sense, many externalists would say you can rule out this possibility. And the skeptical argument is supposed to address to everyone across the board, not just the internalist, especially not not just the internalist, but also to the externalist. Okay. So, but this would be a different type of argument here. I'm just addressing this type of argument, which has been figuring mainly here in the discussion.
Any other questions? So then I would like to ask one question. So I always think when philosophers try to offer these explanations, and now you gave me the explanation, all perhaps we find this premise be too so plausible because of this mixing up of assertion and these different conditions for asserting it and knowing it and so on. But somehow I now hear the story and I think, no, this is not my problem. And I even still subscribe to the revised version of the brain in the wet premise. I find this totally plausible. For me, it was even the case that brain in the wet always meant me. You know, you're a brain in the wet, you don't have a body. You are really just a brain in the wet. The literal meaning, it is often different. The literal meaning of the statement is that you don't have hands. And so I still find this, even within the revised version, very plausible. And
so you find P1 star very plausible?
I find P2 star. This one, of course, I also found very plausible.
Okay, why?
The reason is, of course...
You find it very plausible that you don't know that you have hands?
No, that's of course not. I mean, the point, of course, is we start with plausible premises, and then degree basically something which we find very counter to. This is of course true. And now, I mean, at the beginning, you said the question is just whether I find these premises plausible or not. Yes, I find this. And if I answer you why I find this plausible. I mean, there of course I would bring into considerations into play, like I can't exclude this, but I mean, of course I can't exclude this because, you know, if you ask for a further argument, then I have to give another argument. And so, I mean, this doesn't refute the point.
I mean, okay, the point is here, I just want to say, if you mix up BID with BID star, then you get some kind of plausibility for PI1 or P1 star, which perhaps you don't have. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I find P1 quite plausible. Actually, I don't find it plausible, but for reasons very unrelated to what I'm talking here now. So then I find it very plausible, but I find P1 star not very plausible. So I think I cannot know that I'm not a brain in a vat. Okay. I cannot know that my brain is not hooked up with a scientist. This is what I cannot know. But I think this is not undermining the possibility, or perhaps per se not undermining the possibility of my habit, of my knowing that I have hands. These are just unrelated questions. Okay. So if you say you still find P1 star plausible, then I would suggest, as I think you can show in the literature, that you might be a victim of this confusion. But if you say, well, after the confusion has been cleared up, you still accept P1 star. Well, have your way, fine. I think just intuitively, you would not find this P1 star plausible because you do not find plausible that you don't know that you have two hands. I mean, who finds this claim plausible? And once you have this display, so once you think that you know that you have two hands, once you think that this claim is plausible, you cannot find P1 star plausible anymore. Except, of course, if you have inconsistent plausibility schemes, yeah, which we want to exclude here. Okay, but of course there's a weakness here in the whole thing, namely, I'm giving here some kind of a possible diagnosis of why people think skepticism is so appealing. And if people say, well, no, this is not the reason why I find it so appealing, I have completely different reasons, and I'm fine with it. Yeah. I just want to say, don't rest it on the first person case. Yeah. Tell a story in the third person case, and then look what happens. Okay, because this confusion is so near at hand here, or possible.
Yes, I think that denying that you don't have hands, denying the conjunction of the P2 star, that would be only true under the assumption that the other half of the conjunction is false, and that you do not, are that you are not a random fact. Isn't that true?
Sorry.
You were saying that to deny P2 star is to say either that you are not a Benjamin Fat, or you are not hand, or that you do have hands.
Yeah.
But when you say you do have hands, and your argument for that point of view is that you see your both hands and you know you have those hands, that is only true if you assume that you are not a Benjamin Fat, because if you were a Benjamin Fat, seeing your hands like this right now would not mean that you really have those hands.
And now we're shifting in a different kind of place. The question is whether it's plausible to say that I have two hands or not to have two hands. And some people would say this is implausible. I'm just looking at one specific argument, which is actually the most famous argument for saying that you don't know that you have two hands. Now people might say, well, there are different ways of arguing that you don't know that you have two hands, and that means an alternative ways, for example, to argue for the plausibility of P1 star.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not discussing about these things, but I actually suspect that many of these arguments are not very good arguments. At least they are not good arguments for an externalist. For an internalist, they are possibly good arguments. And this relates partly to what Ludwig Fahrbach is asking earlier. It depends what, for example, what you mean by saying to exclude possibilities. If there's something you have to rationalize to exclude such possibilities, then it's, as the internalist might demand, then you have a problem here. If you're an externalist, where there's no such rationalization needed, then you need perhaps not have such a problem. I mean, it just must suffice. I mean, in my view, it suffices that you are not a brain in a bed to know that you have two hands. Okay? So if you are not, you may know that you have two hands. But if you are a brain in a bed, then you don't know it. Yeah. But this is a question not with your knowing or not knowing, but a question for you knowing that you know or knowing that you don't know. Okay? So it's the higher order question that you're now posing. And this higher order question, I want to say, is not does not belong to the concept of knowledge, but to the concept of knowledge about knowledge. Yeah. And it's about you. And often it's not just because of this mixing up of assertion conditions with proof conditions. This would be the dialectics here. But of course, if you have different arguments, one has to have to look how this argument works.
Someone else? We have 5 more minutes, so even if it's a long question. Okay, then let's thank our speaker. Thank you very much for the talk.